We are in a series that we started in January. We're going through the Bible. We're reading alongside of the sermon series. It's a teen devotional called God's Great Story. And it the whole purpose of it is to help us get an overview of what does the Bible say. A lot of us, and I say this every week, so if you're here every week, you know, it's, but a lot of us are kind of just jumping in. But a lot of us know the stories, but we don't know how they fit together. And so that's why we're doing this. And we're going to go through Memorial Day weekend and then summer. We're going to, I think we're going to focus on prayer. We're going to do some stuff in the Psalms, and then we may jump back into God's great story. But we're continuing to read on our own. And if you want to jump in, I think we have a couple copies at the back table, the resource table, I think. If we don't, we'll get more. But it's just one page a day, and it's geared towards teens, and it's really good. And so where we are so far, and I've said this, the common thread and theme. Here's the common thread and theme of the Bible. Right? It's amazing that the Bible is the great story of God doing the unexpected for the undeserving through the least expected. And we're going to see that today. We're in 1 Samuel, and I'll get into that in a minute, but I'm going to catch us up in our timeline. We have this big, huge timeline poster in the back of the room, and there's also it's also on PDF on our website under Sermon Resources. So each week we have the sermon audio, the slides, my sermon notes, and a link to that PDF timeline. And it's fascinating to kind of see how everything fits. But this is David and Goliath, and David was right around 1000 BC. So you can kind of see Adam and Eve were about 4000. Moses was 2000. We came out of Judges, Ruth, and Samuel, and now we're in David in 1 Samuel. So you can kind of see where we are, and then Jesus came 1,000 years after David. So that's the timeline. And then here's a brief summary of each of the books of the Bible we've been through. God births a family in Genesis. In Exodus, God builds a nation. In Leviticus, God instructs his people on how to worship him. Numbers, God provides for his people as they're wandering through the wilderness for 40 years. Joshua, God gives them victory as they enter into the promised land. Judges, God protects his people. He raises up military leaders to help them defeat their enemies who they're now surrounded by because they're in the promised land. Ruth, God identifies a kinsman redeemer to redeem Ruth, a Moabite. And then in 1 Samuel, God anoints a king. And that's where we are today. Notice it's all about what God does. God does all these things. And we are the recipients of God's goodness and everything that he does. And then the central, you know, God made a covenant with Abraham in the very beginning, and it applies to all of his children throughout all of the years. And now we're his children, and God tells Abraham, and he tells us that I will be your God and you will be my people. And he keeps his promise. He keeps his covenant blessing. But everything that we learn, everything that we're talking about in the Bible is under that promise of blessing that I am going to be your God. You're going to be my people. And we saw in Genesis that when God cut that covenant, Abraham was asleep. God was the one who did it. And he said, I'm going to keep my side of the covenant and I'm going to keep your side too, because I know you're going to be unfaithful, but I'm going to keep the covenant in spite of your unfaithfulness. And I'm going to send my son. He didn't say this to Abraham at that time, but he started to foreshadow. We see prophecy that he says, I'm going to send my son to keep your side of the covenant. And so God is a good God, but that's God's covenant promise that we're under. And that's good news of his blessing. So today, here we are. Title for today is The Unexpected Hero. And it's a fun message to have kids in the room for. And it's about David being anointed king and then David's battle with Goliath. And so I think we're going to have a good time with this. Last week, we saw that Israel wanted a king like all the nations around them. And so God gave them one. And then that king failed miserably immediately, Saul. And so, but you know, God is so good. He's so gracious that, and we learned last week, God said, they're not rejecting you to Samuel. They're rejecting me. I'm their king. And now they're saying, no, we want a king like the other nations that we can see. And God said, they rejected me. But in spite of that, God's gracious to them. And now we see God's grace. He raises up David. And then eventually he uses their sinful desires to bring about our redemption through Jesus. So it's an amazing story. It goes back to the initial what we see. God does the unexpected for the undeserving. This week, here's kind of the big thought, all right? God doesn't care about what you have or what you do, but who you are and whose you are. It's about heart. It's about what's in our hearts. It's not about our performance. It's not about our behaviors. Those things are outflows. They matter, but they're outflows of what's in the heart. I heard somebody say one time that the thing about the Christian faith is it's easy to counterfeit. You know, we see a lot of people who are doing the right things, and but we don't know what's in the heart. We don't know what the motivation is, but God does. So God's concern primarily is what is in our hearts, because the Christian faith at its essence is about relationship and it's about love. That's what this is all about. So I'm going to dive in. It's 1 Samuel 16 and 17, and kind of the key verse as we talk about that is 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. And many of y'all are familiar with this, but the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height." That's a reference to Saul, because the first king of Israel, they say he was taller than everybody else. He was good looking. He was a stud. He was a warrior. And God's telling Samuel, don't consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And so for 1 Samuel 16 of David's anointing as king, being the next king of Israel, we're going to play this video from the Jesus Storybook Bible, thinking of the kids, but it's so good for the adults. All these stories are on YouTube, by the way. If you go Jesus Storybook Bible, they're all there. And it's got about a 30-second introduction. So as they're prepping that, when the video's done, it's about 5 minutes. I'm going to open it up and just ask you guys, whoever wants to comment, what did you observe?
Isn't that good?
All right. So what'd you experience? What'd you see? What'd you hear? What thoughts came to your mind? It may be that nobody has anything that they want to share, but I just thought, well, I'll see what jumps out for you guys. Anybody have anything as you see that? It's pretty self-explanatory, but is there a thought over here? Brayden? Hang on. Is it on?
Hey, guys. What I noticed in the story was that none of the brother, David wasn't even invited to meet up with Samuel. He was out. He wasn't even picked by his own family to even come meet with him. Wasn't considered by his family even as an option.
Yeah.
But God had already chosen him.
Yeah. Why do you think he wasn't picked? Over here, Jackie, what do you have to say? We'll come back to that.
What stood out to me was that the people didn't want to wait. They said, we want it now.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we go. Over here, Mike. A mic. Get a mic to Mike.
You run so well. I noticed that David represents the king for Israel. You have Samuel, who represents really the prophet.
Yeah.
And then you have the priesthood there, all wrapped up in individual people.
Mm-hmm.
But Christ comes and he embodies all of those in one.
Yeah.
So that's very
good.
Inspiring to be.
Yeah. All right. Any other thoughts? Okay. Oh, we got one right here? Okay.
I think he wasn't picked even by his father because of his appearance. He just looked his appearance. He said he doesn't look like a king.
Yeah. Good. Good. Good sharing. Good interaction. So, I mean, there are probably numbers of reasons why David wasn't invited, but all the brothers were there lined up, and Samuel went to each one. And, I mean, Samuel fell into the trap God said, don't fall into. And we do it too. He was judging by appearances. And when he got to the end of the line and God said, no, none of these, Samuel was baffled. He said, do you have any more boys? Oh, yeah. I mean, well, David, I mean, he's out in the field with the sheep. Well, let's go to David. Goes out there and God says, he's the one. Why wasn't he invited? Maybe because of his appearance, but he was the youngest. He was about 12 years old. He was a kid. He was in Good News Club at Sugar Hill Elementary. You know, he's not ready for that. We need to go to one of the older kids, one of the kids in college, one of the, you know, one recent graduate who has his degree. Not a sixth grader, but that's who God saw. And that's who God anointed to be the next king of Israel. Yes, the least, the last, the most unsuspecting. It dawned on me there was a monarch who years ago, she was born, she was a little girl, and her father had an older brother. And so the older brother was in line to be king, but her dad was not. And she was a woman. And so at that time, females, you know, were kind of the least, the default option. And so if her parents, she was firstborn, but if her parents ever had any more kids and any of them were boys, it would skip from her and go to her brother, even though she was the oldest. And so she just kind of grew up doing her thing, not thinking at all that she would ever be a monarch, that she'd ever be a queen. But her uncle, the oldest brother of her dad, decided to vacate and just leave his lineage to the throne, and he married somebody from another country, and so he was out of the running. Now the line comes to her dad, and her parents have another child, but it's a girl. So she's next in line. And then her dad gets sick. And then her dad dies. And when she was in her early 20s, she became Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth, the one that nobody expected. She didn't expect it. And she ended up being the second longest ruling monarch in England, or the longest ruling monarch in England, and the second longest ruling monarch in modern time. And she was a great queen. She had a heart for God. She was very much like David. If you ever hear the Queen's address at Christmas time, it's all gospel-centered. It's all about Jesus, and God used her in a significant way. So again, we talk about every week, if you think that God doesn't notice you, if you think that God's looking for other people to use and not you, that you're not usable, you're wrong. God usually goes after the ones who are just out in the field doing their thing, who are working at the Jiffy Lube, standing under a car draining oil, who are out on the construction site, who are in school at Sugar Hill Elementary or Artios Academy or wherever you go to school, just doing your thing. But what God looks for is a heart of humility. That's the starting point, a heart that's submitted to God, a heart that's surrendered to God. And David had that. And we know in his life, he really messes it up really big time. But he's a sinner just like we are. And so your mess ups and my mess ups do not disqualify us from God using us. In fact, oftentimes God takes our mess ups and he turns them and he uses them in his advantage for the advantage and in our favor to build up his kingdom and to actually cause us to be closer to him. Because when we mess up, we fall on our face, we fall on our back, we fall on our knees, and we cry out to God. And the Bible tells us over and over and over and over that when we cried out to him in our distress, he heard our cry and he came to us. So anyway, God came to David and anointed him through Samuel. Let's see if I have any other thoughts there. I don't. I think I've touched on all of them. Oh, I love this. Chuck Swindoll wrote a great book on David, on the life of David. And Chuck Swindoll said that David was a nobody that nobody noticed. A nobody that nobody noticed. Isn't that so encouraging? That's just what God does. God notices. He notices you and he notices me. I feel the same way. My goodness. I mean, we talk about this and our worship team, they feel like, who are we to be giving leadership in a church? And, you know, that God would use all of us to start a new work here at Monkey Wrench. But God uses the least suspecting. Moses felt the same way. Moses was like, no, God, you can't be talking to me. I've got a speech problem. You know, you talking to me? God said, yes, I'm talking to you. I'll use your brother with you, but you're the man. I'm not choosing you because you're eloquent. I'm choosing you because I'm choosing you, and I have purposes through you that you may not even be aware of. So the end of 1 Samuel 16, Saul actually employs David. In God's providence, he brings him in. Saul, since he sinned big time and blew it up, he started being tormented, it says, by an evil spirit. He couldn't sleep at night. He's having nightmares. He was miserable. He was restless. And one of the persons in his palace said, well, you need some live music. You know, live music will cheer you up. Just kind of take your mind off things. It'll settle you. Get somebody that plays the harp, you know, a nice guitar player. And somebody said, well, you know, David, the son of Jesse, he's really good. He plays the lyre. Why don't you go talk to him? He's a young, about 15 years old or whatever. So they went and talked to David. And here's what it says, 1 Samuel 16:18. One of the servants answered, I've seen a son of Jesse in Bethlehem who knows how to play the lyre. What is the lyre? I didn't look that up. But is it like a guitar? What'd you say? A harp. Yes, it's a harp. We need some harpists. Like, who says I'm going to go play the harp? Like, that's, but it's so cool. You know, do you have to look like an angel to play the harp? You guys, there are a lot of you that look like angels. I think we have a lot of potential harpists in here. Let's see. So he played the lyre. He's a brave man and a warrior. He's a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is a fine looking man. And see, this guy is falling into the same thing. He's brave. He's a warrior. He's good looking. But the last piece is this. And the Lord is with him. The Lord is with him. So this is interesting. Then Saul sends messengers to Jesse and says, send me your son, David, who's with the sheep. So the thing that jumped out at me is David has been anointed as the next king of Israel. He's not yet ruling as king. It was about, we think, 12 to 15 years before he was really brought in and made king of Israel. But what did he do after he was anointed by Samuel to be the next king of Israel? What would you do? I'd go tell everybody. I'd maybe go to Disney World. You know, I'll put it on a credit card because I'm going to be king one day. We can pay it off when we get there. David went back to the sheep. He's just doing his thing, following God where God had him. And so Saul said, go get him. He's out with the sheep. Isn't that beautiful? And that, you know, that looks a lot like Jesus, that he was a warrior. He ended up, we see this with Goliath. We're going to transition to David and Goliath, but he was also a shepherd. So I'm going to go to Goliath now. So now David is working for Saul. He's probably 15 years old. And in 1 Samuel 17, transitioning, and this is our closing story, but it says this, a champion named Goliath, who was from Gath, came out of the Philistine camp. His height was 9 feet and 9 inches. This dude was tall. He was huge. He was a monster. And I'm just going to give a summary. I'm not going to read the whole text because it's kind of long. But I think most everybody knows the story. But there's some intricacies in this that we may not remember. So the Israelites and the Philistines are set up on two opposing hills overlooking a valley. And they're getting ready to go to battle against each other. The Philistines have Goliath, this huge warrior, 9 foot 9. He's wearing about 125 pounds of armor. I mean, he's just like imposing and terrifying. His name's Goliath. And the Philistines, because they had him, he was like their armored tank. You know, Israel did not have an armored tank, but they had Goliath. And so, of course, they say, hey, we got an idea. How about we send one warrior and you guys send a warrior and whoever wins, wins the entire battle. That way we all don't have to fight. And the Israelites are going, that's not fair. I mean, look at the guy you guys have. This is completely, we have no advantage here. And so that was Goliath's challenge. And day after day, Goliath would come out and he would taunt Israel. He'd issue the challenge and this went on for 40 days. And the Israelites were terrified. They didn't know what to do. I mean, they're like, we can't get past this guy. Any one of us is going to get completely destroyed by him. So they're stuck. Well, David's three older brothers fought in Saul's army, so they were there on the battle line, and David's dad, Jesse, kept sending him back and forth with food and supplies and all that. So David's going to the battle line to give him food and supplies, and he's going back to the pasture to tend to the sheep, and this is basically what he's doing. Every time he goes, he sees they're all still standing there, and Goliath's on the other hill, and David saw all that was going on in verse 26 of chapter 17. It says, what will be done for this man? David says this, what will be done for this man who kills this Philistine and removes this disgrace from Israel? Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? Okay, David is talking through a lens of faith. I mean, he's talking big talk. He's a little kid, but he's talking big talk, not because of his own strength. He's aware of the living God. Who is this guy who's defying the armies of the living God, this uncircumcised Philistine? And we're afraid of him? And so his brothers thought he was being ridiculous, and they made fun of him. But other people heard David inquiring about fighting Goliath, and so they sent him straight to Saul as a potential candidate. That's how desperate they were. Like, all right, if he's going to talk about it, go send him to Saul. See what he has to say. And David said to Saul, let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go out and fight him. Saul thought he was crazy. But David told him that he'd had to fight off lions and bears while tending the sheep, and Goliath would be no different. David had been schooled in fighting, imposing animals. Saul agreed to let him go, but he insisted on David wearing his armor, wearing the king's armor. So David put on Saul's armor, and he could barely even move. David took off the armor and told Saul he'd fight, but just with his sling and a few stones. And now Saul really thought he was crazy. He's going to go out to fight Goliath with no armor, just a slingshot and a few stones. This to me is a great illustration of numbers of things that we can apply to life, but we have to be who we are. You know, what are the tools in your hands and in my hands that we're good at? When you try to wear somebody else's armor and fight the way that they fight, or do whatever the way that they do, live the Christian life the way that they do it. You know, whether it's, you know, prayer, evangelism, whatever, parenting, when you try to not be yourself, it's just not going to work out right. And David knew it wasn't going to work. If he wore the armor and that was what he depended on, he could barely lift the sword. He knew he was going to lose, but he felt confident with the sling and these stones. And so that's what he took. And everybody else thought he was crazy, but he was confident. His confidence was not rooted in his sling and his stones. His confidence was rooted in God. So I'll pick up here, 1 Samuel 17, verses 45 and 47. David said to the Philistine, he said to Goliath, and by the way, Goliath, I'm trying to remember where it was in the timeline, but a few hundred years earlier, Israel had a Goliath, and his name was Samson. But he went off the rails. But he wreaked all kinds of havoc with the Philistines. And now they've got their Samson. And they're like, we're going to get you back. But David goes out. He says to the Philistine, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day, the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day, I will give you the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. I mean, Goliath has to just probably be laughing, right? But at the same time, I would bet he's probably got some fear and terror in his heart because he's going, this is not normal. that's big talk. And it's obvious that this kid is not talking about getting the glory himself. He's talking about the glory for God. So David proceeded to do just that. He slung a stone, one stone, hit Goliath square in the center of the eye, in his head, between his eyes, and he dropped him with nothing more than a sling and a stone. David rushed over to Goliath, and since he didn't have a sword of his own, he pulled out Goliath's giant sword, and he cut off his head. The Philistines couldn't believe what they had witnessed, and neither could the Israelites. The Philistines took off running, and Israel won the battle. What an amazing story. Isn't it interesting that David says, I'm going to cut off your head today? And Goliath's looking at him and goes, with what sword? With your sword. So David wins. So here's some observations from that story. That David's confidence was not in his own strength and ability, but in God's. That's faith. That's the power of faith. And it's like Peter in the New Testament when he's walking on water. We have those moments in our lives when you are walking by faith, whatever the situation is that you're in, and you just go, this isn't me. This is God. And that was David. His confidence was in God. And that comes through faith. That is our link. Paul says in Romans 1, I'm not ashamed of the gospel because there's power in it. It's the power of God for salvation. And here it was a physical salvation against a physical enemy, but it's the power of God. People laugh at the gospel like Goliath was laughing at David, but it's powerful. There is power in the good news of Jesus. And it's encouraging that God can use anyone and anything to accomplish his purposes. He used a little boy who was a shepherd with a sling and a stone. And if he can use David, he can use us. He can use you. He can use me. It's not about us. It's about God. It's about faith that connects us to God's power and to God's Spirit. And our role is just to be open, to allow him to do what he wants to do. You know, oftentimes when we hear the story of David and Goliath, what's the message? What's the takeaway? The takeaway is usually be like David. Have courage to fight your battles. That's not the message. That's not the takeaway, because we can't be like David. Do you know, we oftentimes compare ourselves to David in this story. Do you know who we are in the story? We're the terrified Israelites. That's who we are. Who's David? David is Jesus. Jesus comes in. We're cowering against the enemy. Whatever the enemies are that we're facing, fear, worry, paralyzed by circumstances of life. And Jesus just comes in and conquers those enemies. And he gives us the victory. The Israelites got the victory over what David did. They didn't do a thing. But they got the championship ring. They're the guy that's sitting on the bench, never played a minute the entire year. But he gets a ring, and that's us. So Jesus is the shepherd warrior. He was also voted least likely to be the Messiah. You know, they looked at him the same way. But I think they knew something was up when he's 12 years old teaching the religious leaders in the temple. They thought, there's something different about this kid. But God can use any of us, and he can use all of us. And it doesn't have to do with your strength, my strength, your power. All it has to do with is your availability, your humility, and your willingness to just say, God, use me however you want me to be used. You can't have, and I can't have like an idea of, oh God, here, do this through me. Just God, if you want me to mop floors, if you want me to mow lawns, if you want me to teach school, if you want me to be a stay-at-home mom, whatever it is, I just want to do it for your glory and for the building up of your kingdom, and just let God do what he wants to do. So here's my closing thoughts. That God doesn't care about what you have and what you do, but who you are and whose you are. It's about relationship. David was a man after God's heart. And that's what it means to be a man after God's heart, just to be humble and to say, you know what, I can't drive this vehicle. God, you take the driver's seat. I'm along for the ride. You take me wherever you want me to go. David's confidence was in God. He had eyes of faith and saw Goliath as an enemy of God. He also had the power of God's Spirit, which gave him confidence to fight the battle. The confidence that we have comes from God. There's a verse that just comes to my mind. I think it's 2 Corinthians 3. I can't remember exactly, so I could be wrong. But it says that, you know, Paul is saying our adequacy is not founded in ourselves. Our confidence, our adequacy is in Christ. We are in ourselves. He says we're inadequate. That's who we are in ourselves. But in Christ, we have perfect, full, sufficient adequacy to do whatever it is that he calls us to do. And you may have heard this saying, let's see, God doesn't call the equipped, he equips the called. So you don't have to have it all together to do whatever you feel like God's calling you to do. He will equip you. And that's the step of faith. That's the step of faith when you step out and go, God, I am afraid to do this, but I feel like you're calling me in this direction. I'm just going to trust you. You know, but if we believe that God waits to call us after we're equipped, there's no faith involved with that. So God doesn't call the equipped. He equips the called. David had a heart for God, and as a result, God was able to use whatever David had, his sling and his stones, and whatever he did, he was a shepherd, to accomplish purposes for greater than anything David could have ever named. So we said that it doesn't matter what you do or what you have, but the cool thing is that God can use what you do and what you have for his glory and for the building up of his kingdom when our hearts are connected to him. So closing thought, number two, and this is it. Like the Israelite army in our own strength, we know that we have no capacity and no motivation even to gain the victories over the battles we face in life. Our lunch is just getting eaten over and over. And we have these battles, and some of us, it's just going to be the same battle our entire life. And that's going to be the thing that keeps us connected to Jesus, is this battle. Sometimes we'll have victory over the battle, but we are aware that we have no ability and oftentimes no motivation. We want to, but we don't really want to, you know? So we're aware of that. But we do have a shepherd warrior who steps in on our behalf to fight and to win those battles for us. He comes in and wins the battles for us. Not only that, but he's won the ultimate battle against sin and death, the thing that everybody is terrified of, death, because we don't know the other side. That's an underlying fear that affects everything else in our lives, is this fear of death. But Jesus said, no, don't worry about that. I got you covered. So when we place our trust in him, all of these battles that we face, all of these fears that we have, all of these weaknesses, all of this brokenness becomes usable to God. And what the areas of our life we're experiencing, just continual bombardment and defeat, he begins to give us victory. And that's good news for us today. So let me pray and we'll close our service. Father, thank you for this great example of David. Our takeaway is not be like David. Our takeaway is Jesus was like David and he stepped in for us. And our takeaway is have faith in Jesus. He is our shepherd warrior who comes in and fights our battles and gives us the victory. And as a result, our hearts are filled with gratitude and thanksgiving. And we give him praise and we just want to run to his side and say, Jesus, use me however you want, because you have done for me what I could never do for myself. So Lord, would you cause that message to sink deeply into our hearts, into our minds, into our spirit? Would you change the direction of our life even this morning because of a new awareness of that truth of how deeply we've been loved? We love you and pray in Jesus' name. Amen.